age, so they're quite equal to my age and beyond, I think. But like many detective stories, they have subplots. It's not just the main murder that's important. In the latest one, there's a wonderful thing about someone getting into trouble on a dating app. Throughout the series, there have been also a very particular storyline about one of the residents who has Alzheimer's. And Richard Osman shows us in his writing an enormous empathy with the sufferer and those who care for people with that dreadful disease. So that's sort of another theme. And there's always a twist, as in all those books, at the end. Why do I mention this? Well, it seems to me because our gospel this morning is full of twists and subplots. And as you read it, you can get more and more into it. Yes. It's entitled Paying Taxes to Caesar, or a similar use of words, depending on your version of the Bible, about which, of course, there is a moral and there's a political and there is a religious question. But as we go along, we discover that actually there's a bigger plot. This whole theme of paying taxes to Caesar is being used by the Pharisees to attempt to trick Jesus, resulting, as we see heard, in a bit of trickery in return. There are touches of irony when you listen to the conversation. And I'll mention it properly later, but there is a darker side going on here in the form of the coin. But Jesus, there is an ending, I think, which turns it all round. The Pharisees had taken the tax issue, believing it to be a really catch-22 situation, which Jesus just could not escape from. There were three major views on it. They were the Jewish nationalists, the zealots, which I understand flatly refused to pay this tax, based on the fact that, of course, Caesar was an invading emperor and ran, but mainly because the coin bore the image of Caesar on one side, and there was the words that were written on them at the other side, which were in effect saying that Caesar was the son of God, the great high priest. And they believed, of course, that God alone was their king and ruler. It would have been blasphemous for them to carry anything like that around with them, never mind use it. On the other hand, the Herodians, who the Pharisees sent to Jesus with their juniors, they actually were quite happy to pay it. They were, obviously Herod was there by virtue of Caesar anyway, and they were all in it together. So they supported the payment of the tax. The Pharisees themselves took quite a neutral view. They deplored the payment in principle, but they weren't prepared to stand out against it. Their reasoning, they said, was that they weren't prepared to consider encouraging any revolt because in his own good time, God would set Israel free. I wonder also if it wasn't more a case of being more expedient for them to keep their heads down. So the Pharisees and the chief priests send their underdogs. You know, they don't go themselves to Jesus. They send their juniors, their young students, to do their dirty work and challenge Jesus, making sure that Herod's supporters would be there as well, because they want to put Jesus really on the spot. If Jesus were to say that they shouldn't pay the tax, they could then report him to Pilate. And as with anyone who openly caused any revolt against the tax, death was pretty certain. And interestingly, there have been such revolts in the past, and such deaths were normally on a cross. Crosses had lined the roads with people who had refused to pay. At the same time, of course, Jesus was claiming to be speaking in the name of God, wasn't he? And as much such would have been expected to oppose the tax. Failing to do so, surely, would lead all those who had followed him. And we need to note that this event took place just after Palm Sunday, as we know, when the people had been there shouting Hosanna, calling him the king. they'd have lost all faith in him if he'd actually paid the tax. Well, Jesus being Jesus knew the trap. He turns the tables on them. This is the trickery in return, by asking to see the tax coin with Caesar's image and those words that describe Caesar as the Son of God, the great high priest. And believe it or not, they actually get out a coin and they hand it over. It's just amazing if you realise what they're doing, because in doing so, they're showing themselves to hold a blasphemous item and what they were willing to do with it. They were carrying a coin around with the head of Tiberius on them in their possession. They couldn't see the irony of it all. And of course, Jesus ends this malicious confrontation with those famous words that we all recognise in one form or another: give back or render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. The irony of this is what was about to happen later, if you think about it. Because they were not only willing to render to Caesar something that was blasphemous with that king high priest. In a few days, who said he was Son of God? A few days later, they would be handing over the real Son of God, who was actually made in the real image of God, to Caesar by handing him to Pilate. What questions does all this beg for us to look at? Well, I wonder, first of all, what is Caesar's? Caesar's image on the coin provides graphic evidence that, of course, it was Caesar who created it. It was linked to his empire. It was the legal tender of the time and was one of the tools which Caesar used to raise money to pay for his empire, although I suspect it was mainly for a military army and the roads that they were needed to do, and his own cronies. That's what they were paying for. We're in the process of getting new minted coinage. I haven't seen a 50 pence piece with King Charles's head on it yet. I had a look at my purse yesterday, but I'll sort of brought one. Charles is our head of state, and to him we owe allegiance. Fortunately for all of us, we have a monarch who recognises his own subservience to God. But we are King Charles's subjects. Although, of course, he holds little power. It's the government we pay all our taxes to, isn't it? It's the government that make the laws, and we are expected to keep them so that, in the main, we can all live safely and we have the benefits of a modern-day society. I'm sure many of you don't relish the tax bill. We might not like the decisions about the way it's raised and who pays. We might disagree even more with how it's reallocated out. Might have plenty to say about it. But I hope we all recognise that taxes, national or local, in this modern day society are what give us the things we couldn't provide for ourselves: a health service, education, police, even down to the man who empties our rubbish bins. We pay because we are part of this society, and it's the right thing, surely, to do. When Paul was writing to the Romans, he told them that God appointed these higher authorities and that we are obliged to obey them. And I know in some cases it probably runs a bit difficult, and when we see some of the despots of the world. Paul's quote is, "For this reason you pay taxes, for those in authority are there only by God's permission." So, as citizens of this country, yes, I reiterate, we do have an obligation to the state. The irony is, if you look back at the confrontation Jesus was having and hear what the Pharisees thought about it, is that they deemed it was right to pay because as God had put them on until God removed Caesar. And actually, by Jesus saying, "Give back and pay it," he's agreeing with them. He didn't agree with the Pharisees very often. I don't know whether they realised he was doing so at the time. But perhaps more importantly, what is God's? From the very beginning, in the book of Genesis, we know that we as humans have been created by God in his image. The image we have stamped on us is God, not Charles or any other human leader. The reading Barbara had from Isaiah was all about the fact that God, we're in God's image, we're made like him. We belong to God. We are God's. And that means everything we are, everything we do, belongs to God. We are God's legal tender. We serve as God's legal tender in this world. You might remember, or thought, I thought, when we bring our offerings forward in the service, the words most often used are all things come from you, and of your own do we give you. Everything comes from God. Everything goes back to God. And I have some absolute favourite words from the marriage service, which I think is irrelevant in the sense that marriage is part of God's gift in creation. Of the words that the couples say to one another, I think the most beautiful are these. All that I am, I give to you, and all that I have, I share with you. They are the most beautiful words in this at service. What couples are saying about their relationship with one another beautifully, if you like, describes our obligation to God and our relationship with him. If I was to take a coin, though, I would have brought one with King Charles if I don't, but if I was to hold a coin in my hand, it's terribly small. My hand's quite small. I'm quite small. This building's quite small, but it's getting bigger and bigger. But there's nothing as enormous as the space God's world and the universe. It just says to us that actually God cannot be paid off in small change. Our obligation to him is huge. It exceeds everything else. So what do we do when the currencies clash? I'm sure you've had occasion. I don't believe we can ever actually put those two things, Caesar's and God's, into completely separate boxes. We can't separate Caesar's realm from God's realm because everything belongs to God. So Caesar's realm is within God's realm. It's put there by God. But yes, there will be times when the currencies clash, and what do we do? Do we choose? We may have to speak out. We may speak out against injustice in the world. And I'm not just thinking about the state. What do you do if you're at work and people ask you to do something that's unethical or immoral? What about when you're in a group or any sort of organisation where you feel there is a clash of your conscience? And that can even happen within the church in the small c. The Church of England has been in trouble in the past for the way it places and its investments. And people have had to challenge that because they felt it wasn't right. As Christians, we all have a duty to be both servant and conscience of the state. God doesn't send us a bill, does he, each week from HMRC like they do. That the HMRC was worked out to the last penny, isn't it? This is what you owe us. God leaves us to work out for ourselves what is right and what is wrong. He trusts us to do the right thing. But in fact, of course, the tax bill's already been paid. It's been paid for each and every one of us in the way that those Pharisees could not see at the time. Was that God had sent his son to pay the bill on the cross. Amen.